A slight correction from last week. I was doing some additional studying on that theater in Ephesus where they gathered to shout, you know, for 2 hours, great is Artemis of the Ephesians or great is Diana of the Ephesians. And some of the estimates were 3,000 to 4,000. But this week I came across two estimates that said upwards of 25,000. I looked at a picture of it. I don't know if you could fit 25,000 people in there, but maybe they could. At any rate, it was a lot of people shouting for a long time. Whatever it was, however many there was, it did not intimidate Paul in the slightest. If you knew that these people are angry and you're the target of their anger, would you want to walk into that theater and say, hey guys, I'm the target of your anger. Here I am. But he was not intimidated in the slightest. He was bold and he was confident. Earlier we see that his intention is to go to Rome and beyond. Rome is a dangerous city for him at this point, because he is looked at as the cornerstone of the problem of this Christian cult that is growing in the Roman Empire. But Paul is very confident. And you ask yourself, what gave Paul confidence? What gave Paul the confidence to go anywhere and say anything in the face of any opposition? He was absolutely unintimidable. He could not be intimidated no matter what they did. And I would suggest to you that what made him confident was truth. He had enough truth. He had enough content. He had enough answers. And he'd learned about Jesus in those years when he was quiet after his conversion. And he had an answer for the hope that was in him. Truth matters. It equips you to do the work of the church, the work of the Lord. Last night, late, I was meeting with a young man for a little bit. And I came to know him at Sohi a few years ago. He didn't run for me, but I knew him. I saw him yesterday afternoon. He said, could we meet a little bit? So I met with him. He said he felt the Lord moving to help others. He wanted to be a mentor. He wanted to teach other people. He wanted to encourage and help other people who were struggling, other people his age. I asked him, what do you have in you to mentor others with? And he said, I don't have much. So he didn't have the confidence of Paul. He didn't have very much in there. As we continued to talk about Bible principles and Bible verses, he didn't know any of them. Now, I'm not saying that he couldn't still be an encouragement, because the changed life is an encouragement whether or not it has great contextual content or not. But he's going to have to get some more answers to the questions that the people he wants to help are going to ask before he can be a great, the use that he feels burning within him to be. And like I said a second ago, the desire to do something great is easy. Training yourself to do it is harder. You might say, hey, I want to learn to speak French, you know. But the actual doing it is much harder. And so as I closed with him, I asked him if he'd ever been in a post office. And much to my surprise, he said no. I didn't know you could be a college age and never been in a post office. But he said he knew what they looked like, he thought inside. And I asked him, about what it looks like, the wall of little doors with keys and boxes and all that. And I asked him what he thought it looked like from the backside. And he said, well, it's got a bunch of empty boxes. And, you know, there's some stuff in some of them maybe. And I said, yeah. I said, that's like your theology, that backside of that. You have all these little questions about God, about Jesus, about the Bible, about justice, about heaven, about heaven. I was walking in the hall this morning down there, and there's the goal. I think it's for the first graders, their goals for the year. And one of the goals for one of the first graders, I want to learn how we float to heaven. And I thought that was, you know, it wasn't all that far off when you really thought about it. At first, it was kind of cute, but these are questions. You see, they're empty. And as long as they're empty, you have nothing to offer, because all you can offer is emptiness. But as we study and mature, we start to get little bits of truth, right? We learn a little bit about Jesus. Paul spent 3 years teaching all these churches that they've established. And remember, we said they're traveling throughout Asia, during these 3 years, they're just not sitting in one spot. That people are going out and strengthening the churches over and over again, teaching, correcting. We're getting answers to the questions that enable us to help others. Now, we'll never have complete answers. What we're looking for is sufficient truth. Does that make sense? I can't claim to have complete truth about anything. But I want to have sufficient truth to have confidence in order to teach, to share, to encourage. And so we're trying to find the answers to the big and the little questions. And when we can get sufficient truth, we can help others. So if you want a ministry like Paul's, if you want to be critical to people around you, gain truth. Arm yourself with it so you can be a great encouragement and source of truth to our world as Paul was to his. In chapter 20, verse 1, we read, as we picked this up from last week, and the uproar, remember, was the big riot in the theater. When the uproar had ended, Paul sent for the disciples and after encouraging them, said goodbye and set out for Macedonia. So he's going to be moving on. Now, what do you think when it says encouraged him? You think he said, hey guys, dig deep, you're going to do well? You know, I love you all? You think that was all he had to say for encouragement? I think there was some content in there. You know, always trying to shore up struggles that they had, weaknesses, because they're all coming from different religious backgrounds. Some of them from a worship of Greek gods, Roman gods, some of them from Judaism, without a knowledge of Jesus Christ as the Messiah. And so he's encouraging them in our faith. And I think that's what we're all called to do, isn't it? To encourage the people we come across in the faith. And when we're doing that, we're being used. Verse 2, he traveled through the area speaking many words of encouragement to the people. There you see the word again. Finally arriving in Greece. Remember, he's working. He's already committed to where he's going. He's going to go back to Jerusalem and then he's going to work toward Rome and then possibly beyond that. They say even as far as Spain. He finally arrived in Greece where he stayed 3 months. Now he's just going about to sail back to Israel, but he changes his mind. It says, because the Jews made a plot against him just as he was about to sail for Syria, he decided to go back through Macedonia. Now you have to understand that he doesn't travel alone. He's just not one guy walking out on the highway. He has a whole entourage of people who are protecting him because he is definitely a target. And it seems like possibly the Jews were thinking once he's on the ship, he won't have as many people to protect him. We'll be able to get rid of this guy once and for all. But obviously they know what he's doing because they know he plans on going on a ship. But he also knows what they're doing. So people are talking behind the scenes and they're saying, so he changes his plans. And instead of going on the ship, he goes back to Macedonia. And then it lists in verse 4, he was accompanied by Sopater, son of Pyrrhus from Berea, Aristarchus and Secundus from Thessalonica, Gaius from Derbe, Timothy also, and Titius and Trophimus from the province of Asia. This is quite a group. I mean, these guys are from all over. These people who have followed him closely. Remember, it talked about the 12 earlier. They had 12 strong leaders that they were using. I don't know if these guys were all of them or some of them. It doesn't really give us that direction. But these men went ahead and waited for us at Troas. And then verse 6, notice there it says we. It's the first time it's kind of first person pronoun just showed up from nowhere. But we sailed from Philippi after the Feast of Unleavened Bread and 5 days later joined the others at Troas where we stayed 7 days. And then there, once again, he's going to stay and encourage them, exhort their faith because he doesn't know if he'll ever be back. Many of you have never started a fellowship, a church, a group of believers, but many of you have helped somebody else come to a knowledge of Jesus Christ through clear direction from the Bible. And you have a certain heart for that person or that group. You care about them. You don't want to see them fall away. You don't want to see the devil get at them. And I think that Paul feels this deeply. And he's a very bright person. He understands the temptation. And he's seen people go back and leave the faith and go back to their ways, their culturally accepted ways. And then it says in verse 7, on the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. And on the first day of the week is Sunday, right? So the last day of the week is Saturday, because, you know, Jesus worked, or I mean, God created the world, and then he rested on the seventh day. So the next day, the first day of the week, is Sunday. So they're going to meet on Sunday. I only say that because there are certain groups who make a big deal about what day you worship on. The Bible gives no clear, the New Testament gives no clear direction on what day a New Testament believer is supposed to worship. Every day is the Lord's. Doesn't matter whether you meet on Friday or Tuesday or whatever. What's important though, it says, do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together. We need each other to keep alive in our faith. And we just can't let that slide. But they met the first day of the week, and it says they came together to break bread. Breaking bread here is eating together. They're sharing a meal together. This is what a sign of hospitality. Remember, this is a honor-shame culture. Hospitality is still very important. You meet together and you share a meal. And he intends to leave the next day, so he kept on talking till midnight. I joked about this the other day that I thought, because, you know, whenever my last Sunday here is, I'll just keep talking till midnight to follow Paul's example. So, but remember though, it's not like this where he's standing up and you're sitting in rows, you know, trying to stay awake. It's kind of sitting around. You know, if just think, if Paul came to your house in the evening and you had a bunch of Christians there, how long could you talk to him? How long could you ask questions? Wouldn't it be kind of fun? I mean, just because all the generations of complications that have made our faith hard for us to understand wouldn't be there. The clarity of thought of the early church, of the early knowledge about Christ would be in him. And they know this. And there's a strong bond. And the bond is a bond of commonality, of knowledge of God. But it's also a bond of safety, you know. We could all die. We can all be killed for this. There's a strong bond there. And so he just keeps going and going and going. And I think they're just sitting around and talking. I think adults don't do this as much, older adults, because like 8:30, they're going, okay, it's about time to head home now. But when you're young, college age, you know, you're up in the dorm and you're talking about philosophy or whatever. You go, you know, way into the night. And I'm not even talking about bad things that you do way into the night. I'm just talking about, you know, the discussions that go on and on. And so he kept talking till midnight. And verse 8 says, there were many lamps in the upstairs room where we were meeting. And I'm not quite sure of the significance of that. It may have created heat or smoke. I don't really know. But Luke puts it in there. And he says, seated in the window was a young man named whatever his name is there. And who was sinking into a deep sleep. I like the term deep sleep. Just like Luke cuts him no, you know, first of all, he's talking, you know, he's talking it till midnight. And then he says he went into a deep sleep. He's not just dozing like you guys do sometimes. He's gone, you know. Because I've never yet seen anybody just slide out of the chair onto the floor, you know. I mean, it may happen someday. But I remember when I was a kid in church, man, I just wanted, that pew looked so nice to lay on. Why did I have to set up? But anyway, Paul's going, and then notice what he says here. He fell into a deep sleep as Paul talked on and on. It doesn't say as Paul taught or shared. So, you know, it's a little rough on the critique here. But when he was sound asleep, he goes even to more detail. He fell to the ground from the third story and was picked up dead. Paul went down, threw himself on the young man and put his arms around him. Don't be alarmed. He's alive. And then he went upstairs again and broke bread and ate. And they talked until daylight. The people took the young man home alive and they were greatly comforted. You see in the Bible, if you look through it, there are several times when someone throws themselves on a person and they come back alive. We see it in Elisha. We see it in Elijah. The result's the same. I mean, how many of you'd have the confidence to say, don't be alarmed? You know, everybody's a bit alarmed, but he says, don't be alarmed. And then he just keeps on talking. But he wasn't just preaching, he was sharing. You know, they were hungry for every ounce of truth they could get that would sustain them once he was gone. because they knew how hard what the future held for them. And it did get tough for them. And if you study the history of Rome, and as the emperors get more and more corrupt, the Christians suffer more and more. They're not foolish people. They're counting the cost, but they still want to be encouraged as much as they can. When I was in Russia, I think I shared this with a couple of you. They asked me, I wasn't scheduled to preach on Sunday morning. I just had taught while I was there. And they said, well, what would you teach again on Sunday morning? You need to take at least 3 hours. You know, and I'm like, nope. I don't think I can. I mean, I probably could. Ask Belle. She'd probably tell you I could talk for 3 hours. But, you know. But they have an interpreter, see, so you only have to talk half that time because she's interpreting for you. But I didn't even talk half that time, but I did love teaching with them. They were wonderful. And it reminded me of this because they wanted to learn. Those young men that I was talking with in that situation, they wanted to learn. They wanted any bit of truth that they could get, any glimpse of hope in a really dark future for them. And so it's not like us who take it and leave it. They realized how critical it was. It also reminded me of another story. I've shared with you, a few of you, the book Jesus Through Middle Eastern Eyes. It's written by Kenneth Bailey. He's from the U.S., but he taught in Beirut for most of his life and different places in the Middle East. And he tells a story, speaking of the house church in Iran. In Iran, for many, house churches are the only option because it's illegal for a Muslim to attend a Christian church. So you have an ID card, and they put a guard outside the church, and when you go to go in, he has to see your ID card, and if your ID card lists Muslim, you're not allowed to go in to the Christian church. And he tells a story recently. A family, a husband and wife and two daughters, showed up at the Armenian Orthodox Church, which the church is legal to be there, but not to be attended by Muslims. And so the guards, he showed them the ID, and the guard said, you may not enter. The reason is the recent president estimated they were losing between 500 and 1,000 people a month to Christianity. And they wanted to put a stop to that. And so house church was all you could do. But in this case, he shows up. And the guard says, you may not go in. And he says to the guard, let me tell you a story. And then after my story's over, you tell me whether I can go in or not. He says, my daughter got very sick and she got sicker. And the daughter's standing right there. She got sicker and sicker by the day. And one night, I had a vision of a man dressed in white. And this man dressed in white said, you must pray to me for her health. And I asked him who he was, and he said, I am Jesus, the Messiah of God. And this is how they put it. So the man prayed for several days, and the girl got sicker and sicker and sicker, but he continued to pray to Jesus. One night he and his wife got a call from the hospital that the girl had died. We need to come in the morning and get her body and take it and prepare it for burial. He couldn't understand why this had happened, even though it seemed like he had this vision. He went in the morning, and she was dead and cold. But he said he felt compelled to pray one more time. And he stretched himself over her body, and he prayed and asked God, Jesus, to do what he thought Jesus said he would do. And he stood up, and when he stood up, she sat up and asked for food. After telling this story, he looked at the guard and said, this is why I want to go in. Can I go in? And the guard just, yeah, what do I say to that, you know? He couldn't understand a word of the service. He didn't speak Armenian. I don't think he even spoke English. But he wanted to worship and honor Jesus, the Messiah from God. Now, most of you know I'm a serious skeptic about all these kind of stories that I hear. It's just in me because I've seen so much falseness in it. But when I read the Bible, I see that in 2 Kings 17:21, this kind of thing happened to Elijah. That was a long time ago. When I read in 2 Kings, I forget it was 1 Kings, 1 Kings 4:34, it happened to Elijah. It happened to Jesus. It happened to Paul here. It's the same God. God can do what he wants, right? Where he wants, when he wants. When he wants to show a sign, he can show a sign. Not every person that fell from a window and died or fell from a tree and died came back to life. But God does what he does for his glory in his time to strengthen and confirm the church. And it seems like in Iran, for those believers, and there's been several reportings of that kind of thing, that God may do above and beyond what we normally see here in our country to confirm the faith of those who want to walk with God but are so fearful and intrepid of it. These stories can confirm our faith as well, even if we're not there in them. And that's why they're in the Bible. Sure, this is just history. This is just stuff that happened in the past. But the goal isn't to just give us historical facts. It's to strengthen our faith so that we can walk knowing that God makes the difference. Next, we're going to see Paul move toward Jerusalem. It says in verse 22, and we'll look at that next week, but it says, I am now compelled by the Spirit to go to Jerusalem. As Christians, this is what we're looking for, if we can find it, if we can hear it, if we can see it. Compelling of the Spirit to reach out to others, to help, to serve. But in order to hear the Spirit of God, there has to be a certain amount of silence or time apart. When people don't want to hear the Spirit of God, what do? They keep busy. They keep the radio on. They keep the TV on. They go from party to party. There has to be a time in your life where you pull away and you're quiet and you hear the still small voice of God, the leading of his Spirit. And that gives you the confidence. And once you have at least some knowledge, you don't need a tremendous amount of knowledge, but some knowledge of biblical truth, then you can begin to answer questions that people have. Everybody here can answer questions for somebody. And God leads you to those people. Funny things happen. You know, this week I was meeting with somebody on Wednesday, and this person happened to say, hey, I would really like to get in a little study group with some other young men. And I'm trying to think in my mind, what other three or four other young men might I connect this person with? Then last night I'm talking with this guy and he goes, hey, it was almost an exact quote. I would like to get in a study group with three or four other young men. And I'm not real discerning, but a light did go on. It said, oh yeah, I think I know a couple of other young men that would like to do that. Those are the kind of opportunities that are out there if we're paying any attention at all, if we're representing the truth that's deep within us. So be encouraged in your faith. Walk closely, looking for the hand of God in everything. Don't imagine it. Don't create it while it's not there. But when it is there, acknowledge it and be thankful for it. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for being a good God that is incredibly good to us. Help us to not lose sight of you or sharing you with the world as we go about our busy lives trying to survive. Thank you for hanging on to us and loving us so deeply and so dearly. I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.